Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Good evening, Damien Lawler here for Marie and Ruby. Busy show ahead, but we're in the closing stages of the Women's World Cup qualifier in Finland. And we're on the verge of a famous, famous win. It's Ireland 2, Finland 1 in the dying embers of the game. Let's join John Kenny and Alan Colley, who are calling it on RTE Radio 1 Extra.
Ireland and Vera Powell in particular. It's taken a lot of stick over the last while as well. Ireland's results haven't been of the best. They lost to Sweden, but they did show that they had something by beating Australia, one of the world-ranked teams, by 3-2 in a friendly recently. Brilliant work by Payne down the touchline. And she's nutmegged her defender as well. And Jarrett's waiting in the centre. This could be an insurance goal. Brilliant stuff by Payne. She just ran out of steam, getting inside the penalty area. And Vesterlund got across and knocked it out of play. But that's as good as a goal. It's a corner to Ireland.
Oh, her energy levels are phenomenal. And look at the skill to go with it, John, as well. We're in the 89th minute and she's worked her socks off for the whole game, and to produce this right at the end as well, absolutely magnificent from Heather Payne. So unlucky as well, as she just ran out of steam. But to have the ball up in that end of the pitch, go out for a corner, is just as good as a goal right now at this moment in time. And be clever here, Katie, hold it in the corner.
4 minutes to go, because we're into the first minute of added time now. 90 minutes are up, 4 minutes of added time. You might have felt that Heather Payne was just being a little bit selfish there by not knocking it across the goal towards Rhianna Jarrett, but they've got themselves a corner, and they waste the corner, fortunately. So this is going to be nervy for the last couple of minutes. It's been knocked out of play by Jarrett. Well, it was brilliant stuff by Payne down that right-hand side. I thought for 1 second she was just going to let the ball run out of play, but she kept going. But the ball's at the other end immediately, down to Francie. Francie lays the ball back. Brilliant challenge by Payne. She's the player of the match. She's come nowhere. Her energy level's incredible. She just ran half the length of the field, in fact more, to get from a forward attacking position from where she was down by the corner after that shot, and a brilliant sliding challenge just to break up that finish play.
Oh my God, John, that is absolutely sensational play, Heather Payne. She's ran from one end of the pitch to the other, attacking first of all, showing all her skill levels, and then she's back winning tackles, and here she is helping out Ony O'Gorman. Magnificent from Heather Payne.
Ball's chipped in towards the Irish penalty area. It's come off a Finnish player last. That's going to be a goal kick. Minute and a half of injury time is up. That's going to help. And now Courtney Brosnan goes behind the goal, walks slowly towards the ball to take this goal kick. And we just had a quick look at the Finnish bench. They look very dejected. They've still got 2.5 minutes to go. Anything could happen yet. The rain continues to fall in Helsinki. Finland 1, Ireland 2. 10 minutes. Megan Connolly's free kick opened the scoring. 52 minutes, the equaliser. Nice move too. Planted to the back of the net by Angelina Eggman. The lead lasted only 4 minutes before Denise O'Sullivan headed in and gave Ireland the lead once again. If they can hang on here in the last 2 minutes, it'd be a heck of a result. Sweden are the favourites, we know that, to win this group. They've won 3 out of 3. Finland have won 2 out of 2 so far. Ireland lost their opening game to Sweden, but now they're leading and defending to do as the ball's played down towards the edge of the penalty area. O'Gorman could have just dropped her shoulder there and let the ball go behind her and maybe out of play, but she wasn't going to take any chances on the edge of the area to the right-hand side. She just headed it clear, out of play for a finished throw, and they have the ball now on the halfway line with their big centre-half, Anna Vesterlund. Strong player she is, into the penalty area goes. Good strong header away by Fahian. Who else is there? Heather Payne, but she can't get the ball down the line. Finland still have the ball in play with Allenen. Puts it into the penalty area. It's all hands to the pump now as the ball's across the area, and McCarthy gets a good header by her own post to get it clear down towards Jarrett. Finland throwing everything but the kitchen sink, and maybe a bit of a kitchen sink at Ireland, and they've got a free kick on the edge of the area, and this is in a very, very dangerous position from Ireland's perspective with less than a minute to go.
No, it's a free out, Sean. Free out.
It's a free out. Yep. Just for a second, I thought the way the referee was indicating that it was going to be a free, but that was brilliant defence by McCarthy as well on our post area, near post.
Superb. I'm breathless. What a game, John. It's been absolutely magnificent. The girls have fought right till the end. Have been magnificent.
Well, the referee's indication there wasn't the best.
No, it was a foul there. Look, on Jamie Finn picks up a foul right in the edge of the box.
Yeah, Kuka going in hard on her back. And the referee just thought for a second there was actually putting her hands out saying it's a free kick to Finland. 20 seconds to go. Finland 1, Republic of Ireland 2. just a couple of seconds to go as the ball's forced out of play. It's going to be a finished throw. Vera Powell looks at the watch, Alex Ferguson style, and pleads with the referee to blow the whistle. Last attack perhaps. Besselund pumps it forward. Onya Gorman lets the ball run out of play, and it's going to be an Irish goal kick. And is that the moment that Ireland can celebrate? Vera Powell looks like she's happy too, checks the watch, shows it to anybody who's concerned. It's not good for the heart. The 58-year-old in her 14th international. This will be her biggest victory as Irish coach. There's no doubt about that. This is a World Cup qualification game. All eyes on our French referee now as Courtney Brosnan takes this free kick away to her left-hand side, and still they play on. Come on, referee, blow the final whistle. And she's done it. Thank you very much, Alexandra Collin. The full-time whistle is gone, and Ireland have pulled off a famous victory, winning by 2-1. Megan Connolly's goal in the 10th minute opened the scoring. Equalising goal from Eggman in the 52nd minute, but Denise O'Sullivan's 13th international goal and her 87th international just 4 minutes later has given Ireland victory against Finland. And what a priceless victory that is, Alan Cawley.
Absolutely sensational, and no more deserved. From start to finish, they were absolutely terrific. Threw their bodies on the line when needed to, but also the quality of the showed in possession, the goals they scored, the night for Denise O'Sullivan, and even when they were pegged back, they responded again. Brilliant character they showed, and no more than deserving. This sets up the campaign so good for them now, John. Obviously the doubleheader next month against Slovakia and Georgia, but to go away against your probably your nearest rivals vying for that playoff spot, and to get a victory away from home against Finland, who were unbeaten in 10 competitive matches, remarkable result, and all credit to the girls, who were absolutely superb.
Earlier on today, Slovakia beat Georgia by 2-0 to get their first points in the group. So the first points in the group for the Republic of Ireland, and what a victory it is in Helsinki. It's finished. Finland 1, Republic of Ireland 2. From Alan Cawley, from John Kenny, hope you enjoyed our coverage.
Yeah, thanks to John and Alan on RT Radio 1 Extra. That's a great win. Huge win as Ireland look to qualify for a first major tournament. Okay, we'll regroup and recap with Alan in a short while. But right now it's time for a break. Afterwards, we'll catch up with Cork's Jamie Wall.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Healthy dinners made easy with Green Farm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillets range. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on. GAA.
Okay, delighted to be joined now by Jamie Wall, Cork legend, shall we say, for want of a better description at this stage, Jamie, for all the good work you're doing with Mary Eye and the sides back and the club and within the county as well. Jamie is an ambassador for Let's Get Back, a campaign created by Sport Ireland in partnership with Healthy Ireland. And that's a campaign encouraging the Irish public to return to sport and physical activity. Full details of the Let's Get Back campaign and how to get back to sport and exercise in a safe and secure manner can be found at visitsportireland.ie. Jamie, I would say that Let's Get Back to Sport is probably something that a lot of people have done at this stage. Even during lockdown, I saw so many people back out trying to do a bit. Have you found yourself on the ground that people are more engaged in physical activity, or even just for the mental health side of things, are getting back out again?
Yeah, I mean, look, like the numbers are kind of, they suggest that we're still not at the same levels of participation in organised sport. But I certainly kind of, you know, yourself seen around the place, there is an increased, certainly in the summer months, the last few years, there was an increased kind of presence of people getting out walking and running and stuff. And I suppose the next step on that, and what we're trying to promote with the Let's Get Back campaign, is something that I very much believe in, is that, you know, that return to kind of some kind of organised sport. And that could be, you know, joining your local GA club, that could be coaching, could refereeing, it could be five-a-side, it could be, you know, it's that extra step on not just being active, but, you know, being social as well, I think. And, you know, that that element of volunteerism, you know, that's the lifeblood of a lot of sport in Ireland. And, you know, those figures are slightly down. And kind of, I suppose, it's just encouraging people that now that we can, and now that things are, you know, that it's been said that it's safe to get back to sport in various capacities, to do so, you know, because, look, it's definitely a message that I would personally really endorse, you know, having seen, how would I put it? I suppose the pandemic wasn't my first rodeo in terms of being... isolated from the world and kind of taken out of the sport and taken out of all the things you love doing. You know, I obviously experienced that in 2014, and anyone that knows me knows my story and knows that, you know, I got an injury then and that I was in hospital with a long time for, and, you know, and out of sport then, obviously, as I'm a wheelchair user now. And it took me probably far too long to get back into the GAA and to get back into the things that drove me. And there's various reasons for that, but I think as soon as I really got back and got to that in terms of with Mary I and with Cork underage teams and with my club at home now, and but just generally being involved, when I got back into that, I kind of realised how bloody important it is to me and how important it is in general. And I suppose that's a message that I kind of could really very much get behind. You know, when the guys at Sport Ireland asked me about being involved with this campaign, the kind of the key message is one I really believe in, you know, and that's kind of why I'd be so happy to be an ambassador for it, because it's not only that return to physical activity, but that return to sport and, you know, to whatever capacity that is, it's just so good for you, and it's provided such a framework for me personally. And I suppose if I can encourage just one person that's currently hesitating about, you know, to go back in some capacity, you know, if me coming out and speaking on the radio with you today, or, you know, in the paper this morning with some people, like, if that encourages that one person to go do it, like, I know that person will be better for it. You know, what better reason is there to do something than that?
You're on the hunt for success with Kilbritton at the moment. You've been there with Mary I, with the Fitz, and I guess with your Cork underage career, and hopefully your future involvement with Cork teams as well. There is that quest for target and glory and formulating game plans and getting teams ready and prepared to push for glory. But to rewind the journey a small bit, Jamie, just to commit maybe to that sense of volunteerism, gives you a rich sense of belonging, doesn't it? It's not just the silverware, it's the association and the sense of belonging that, yeah, I belong here. This is who I am. That's nearly as important in the return to sport as anything else.
I would say it's more important, Damien, because it's more all-encompassing. You know, like, there's only ever so many of us are going to, you know, are going to get to be at that, you know, like you said, chasing the glory, you know, getting to finals or semi-finals or all those things. And you know, like, I know myself better than most. When you're involved, there could be a lot of years where you're nowhere near glory, you know. So there has to be more to it than that. There has to be another reason why you do stuff. And I think, you know, in the last 12 months especially, I've probably got more involved at home because I've been at home with the pandemic initially and study from home. And then I was on my placement in Cork in a law firm called RDJ. And like, I was based in Cork, so I was at home around. And I got involved, exactly. And like, it had been a while, and I got involved with my intermediate team at home. I took over there, but I also got involved with our under-15s this year. And, you know, you kind of, you get a sense of why you're doing it overall. You know, like, I'm looking at the 15s and thinking, how can I help this young fella improve so that in a couple of years he's on our intermediate team?
Yeah.
And it may be for me, but it may be for someone else, but it's for me ultimately, because I'm a club man and I'm part of the club. And that sense of, like you said, belonging and kind of home and that, like, and that's something I think that not just the GAA, but like all clubs, you know, in your area are there to provide and are there to promote, you know, like, and that's kind of, like I said, it's nearly more important because it's more relevant to more people, if that makes sense, you know?
Yeah, and it's inclusivity and that big warm embrace you get from the likes of the teams and the players you mentioned there. And I even see this morning, Sir Alex was at Old Trafford training ground in Carrington, trying to protect Ollie and trying to look after him because he feels Solskjaer is where he belongs. I'm looking out the studio. Some scoundrel has left a Liverpool scarf draped over the studio door here. And yeah. I know you were over in Old Trafford at the weekend. My God, you picked some dirty game to go over from a Man United perspective, Jamie. And I'm a fellow sufferer with you.
Yeah, it was a tough day. No, I brought my dad with me, and it was like, yeah. My dad is the person who kind of got me into Man United from a very young age, and like, just I've owned so many old jerseys from the 90s, and soccer was kind of dad's preferred game, and he's the one who got me into Man United and sport in general, like, you know. And getting to bring him, he used to bring me to Ireland soccer games was our thing, and back when we used to live in Navan, and getting to bring him over to United Liverpool, I kind of thought, this is the ultimate payback now, Dad. Like, I've got you to the big one, like, and we arrive over and they just get battered from minute one. Like, I was telling the lads, I actually missed the first goal because I was inside in the toilet, just, I was thinking, oh, I'll go to the bathroom before a game, and you know, I hear this noise, and I was like, you know when there's like a noise, it's not a full stadium noise, it's like
one
massive noise in a midst silence, and you're just, because we're underneath the away fans, of course, in the disabled section, and I was just like, oh Christ, no, and I arrive out, and of course it's 1-0, and then I missed the fourth goal because I'm gone in at half time at 48 minutes thinking, oh, sure, look, they surely won't concede again. And then I hear the same noise and I'm like, oh Christ. But anyway, yeah, look, I may have picked a bad one to start off with, but look, sure.
Hard to know where to go from here, Jamie, to be honest with you.
It is, I suppose, like, I mean, I think like a lot of Man United fans, and I spoke to a lot of United fans over there, and I don't think there's ever going to be a massive, you know, Ollie out movement. I don't think they're going to turn on him. I don't think, even though I don't think he is still the right man for the job, I'm never going to, like, you know, come screaming and for his head because, you know, he's a legend of the club and what he did for the club. And I think that's probably the general feeling among a lot of United fans. I'm not going to speak for all of them, but I think that was kind of the groundswell of opinion that I got knocking around the place. Now, mind you, a lot of people were beaten down and despondent, so it's hard to be too certain.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just going to throw two last things at you, Jamie, before we wrap up. Shefflin, off to Galway. Surprised at that, were you? Or will you think he'll do a fantastic job? Or what are your thoughts on it?
Can I be both?
You certainly can. Yeah.
Yeah, I was surprised, but I was surprised just because, like, it seemed to come out of nowhere. It just seemed to be so kind of like, it obviously, the direction of travel was, it's going to be Davey, and then it just seemed to just happen that, oh, it's Shefflin and it's announced. that was incredible. Just the way it actually happened was really interesting. It's like the least GAA thing ever, you know. no leak at all. Jesus, fair play to the Galway County Board and to the Shefflin camp there. But I'm really excited to see. I said it to a few people today, when we're talking, and like, it's the most interesting appointment they could have made. Yeah. You know, it's got the most potential upside, like, it could be incredible, you know, and he's so synonymous with probably that streak of ruthless winningness that probably Galway teams have, certainly in my lived experience. Look, they've won one All-Ireland since I was born in 92, off the top of my head. I think they've won one, is it?
Who's this Galway? Just one since.
Like, it's just the one since then, and like, you know, but they've always been one of the best teams as long as I can remember. So like, he's going to bring that, you would imagine, and you know, they say teams take on and resemble their managers, you know, so you'd think he'll bring that and that kind of sheer drive that is synonymous with him. And I think, you know, it's funny like that it's Shefflin and Galway, because the game everyone thinks, well, the game I certainly think of when I think of, you know, what game defined Henry Shefflin and his kind of drive, like, I always think the drawing game in 2012.
Yeah.
And that second half, and that kind of
single-handedly
No, I'm actually not going to settle for this. I'm not happy with this, and just goes and breaks their hearts. And but like, even, you know, not just that, like he's won two All-Ireland club titles as a manager, and like, that's one of the hardest competitions to win, and you don't do that if you don't know a thing or two about, you know, the tactical side of the game. And so it'll be very interesting to see what way he sets up an inter-county team, because obviously, look, senior intercounty and senior club are, while there is definitely transferable skills, you know, the intercounty game has gone to a level in the last couple of years, and it hasn't gone to a level. Limerick have brought it to a level where the tactical side of the game has increased exponentially. Like, so seeing what, in my eyes, the greatest hurler in my life, and in my lifetime anyway, seeing how what he brings to that, you know, does he bring something new to it? Does he change something? Is he part of the next evolution? is he going to just, you know, row in with that current way and be better at it than everyone else the way he was the player, you know? So I just think, like I said, it's a really interesting appointment. And this is no disrespect to Davy Fitz or to any of the other candidates, like even Micheál Donoghue, like, you know, this is not to disrespect them, it's just this is so much more interesting as a completely neutral observer, because you're just like, can't wait to see what happens here. Whereas, you know, with Davy or even Micheál Donoghue, you know, to an extent, you kind of know what was going to happen. You know, they're going to come in and imprint their style and their way of being, and that's not a bad thing or a good thing. I'm not saying it's either. What I'm saying is,
it's all brand new.
You'd have known. Whereas this is like, okay, what is going to happen in Galway? Do you know, like, we're all just there like, fantastic, can't wait. Like, first game will definitely be broadcast. Like, there'll probably be a row between RT and TG Carr or whoever for the rights. Like, but, you know, it's like, there's going to be so much interest in it. So, fantastic. We've already got our first story of the season, and it's not even December.
Jamie Wall, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Damien. Pleasure.
Game on. GAA. Game on 2FM with Green Firm. Fuel your day with Green Firm's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on football.
And they both step back in a purposeful way. It's Connolly. The Republic of Ireland lead in Helsinki in the 10th minute. Megan Connolly with the strike. Corpella couldn't keep it out. And Ireland lead on the road in Finland. Ireland down to 10 for the moment as Hirainen gets in around the back. And the goal from Adelina Engman. Finland are level in the 7th minute of the second half with Ireland down a player. They got to the end line. Ireland couldn't clear the cross. And the former Chelsea player gets her second goal of this qualification campaign for Finland, and it's 1-1 in Helsinki. From Koivisto, now it's Heather Payne. She's ploughed that long furrow up front. The goalkeeper's dropped it, and O'Sullivan, that's over the line. Denise O'Sullivan. Ireland back in front in the 56th minute. A terrible mistake by Corpella, the Finnish goalkeeper, and Denise O'Sullivan just would not give up. Great cross from Heather Payne, and after the shock of the Finnish equaliser, Ireland are back in front. Denise O'Sullivan with the goal.
Yeah, back in front they stay too. That's the story of the game. Alan Cawley is with us now. Alan, I was at the Ireland-Sweden game last week in Tala, and that's a transformation and a half. What were the biggest changes in your opinion?
Yeah, incredible result, Damien. It's probably as good as I've seen the women's team play, certainly under Vera, but definitely in the last 3 or 4 years. That result is absolutely massive, both in terms of the performance and also where it leaves them now in the group, because obviously we're trying to qualify for our first major tournament. It's something that's never happened for the women's team. You mentioned you were at the game against Sweden, and Sweden are on a different level and they're operating at a different level, Damien. So realistically, we were always targeting maybe Finland and vying for that second playoff spot with Finland. So this was the game that they were really going to target in terms of trying to get 3 points or even get a point, the fact that it was away from home and set us up for the campaign. But to go away, to perform as well as we did, to get the victory as well, that really sets up the group now for us, because the next two games that we play will be against Slovakia and Georgia, who are two teams that you would expect us to be beaten, especially if we've aspirations to qualify, which we do. But the biggest difference for me tonight was the approach, Damien. The other night against Sweden, and we've discussed and debated this, Marie and a couple of us around the show, since the game last week, they were very defence orientated against Sweden, which was understandable because of what you're playing against. And they played effectively 5 at the back, 4 in front of that, and 1 up top on Heather Payne by herself.
No threat, really.
And there was no threat, and we were kind of relying on maybe the odd set piece or a free kick or a corner kick, but we never really carved out any clear-cut chances. And I just felt towards the end of that game that they would have been much better served with maybe 15 minutes to go. The fact that they'd stayed in the game for so long at 1-0, have a right go, throw two up top. In the end, all they really did was throw Louise Quinn up top, and I felt that was the wrong move. So tonight I was really interested to see what Vera had up her sleeve in terms of the approach to this game, considering we're more evenly matched against Finland and the fact that we had to get a result. So the fact tonight she went with, obviously, there's still five at the back, but it was more wing backs with Katie McKay pushed on and Anya Gorman on the far side. She brought Jamie Finn into a midfield three alongside Megan Connolly and Denise O'Sullivan, and she had Lucy Quinn operating in around Heather Payne and support up top. But if you look at the amount of times we created chances tonight in the game, Damon, but the amount of bodies that we had in the box as well, so they were on the front foot right from the kickoff, and I felt the approach was absolutely brilliant. The setup, the formation, the structure around the team, and the performance in itself in terms of the girls carrying that out, I thought it was absolutely outstanding tonight.
Yeah, and all of that makes sense to me, because if you look back at the Sweden game, Alan, it just felt like the crowd were there waiting to get behind them and waiting to drive them on, but it didn't happen. They looked to be content enough with the 1-0. But tonight, how much more confidence will they get from seeing what is possible whenever they do attack? And it was near, I won't say wave after wave, but it was pretty frequent forays into the opposition, and that'll surely drive them on going forward, Alan.
Yeah, particularly again, as you say, you're going against a team who was effectively going to be your nearest rivals in terms of the playoff spot in the group. So for them to go away and not only get the result, Damien, sometimes you can get results like that where it could be backs to the wall and you might get the odd set piece. But as you say, the performance was outstanding in terms of the approach, the football we played, the chances we created. Katie McCabe raiding down the left-hand side, particularly in the second half. Two or three times she got in, a couple of great shots. The keeper pulled off a couple of saves. But overall, I just thought the work ethic, the endeavour from the team, but the quality they also showed when in possession, I thought they were really, really good. And as I said, I've been following this team now probably for the past 2 or 3 years, covering them. They were really unlucky in the last qualifying campaign. They have real aspirations in terms of qualifying for the major tournament, the World Cup, but that's the best performance I've seen from them. And going forward, Damien, that will give them such confidence in the group, and it has to, because I said the next game, they've had two difficult opening games, obviously Sweden and tonight. There was probably a little bit of pressure on them tonight, because if you were to lose away to Finland, you're on 0 points. Finland will be sitting on 9 because they won their first two games, and you'll be looking at the table thinking, we've a mountain to climb here. To get the victory away from home, now they have their first points on the board. They've the two games coming up against the two teams who we'd expect us to win, and it really sets up the group
in a great place. Vera Powell is a happy, happy woman. Let's hear from her now.
Vera, congratulations. You called them tigers before. Will they show they've got bite tonight as well?
Yeah, it's amazing. And this was not our most beautiful game, but the most effective game. And if you see the way that they can have the discipline to play that style when we need it, that is amazing. And you can only say that all those defeats that we had with all those high-ranked teams, without those defeats, we wouldn't have been able to do this.
But momentum is such an important thing in sport, and now you've got it.
Yeah, we said it needs to turn round. The luck needs to come our way. We had a few times luck. If you can score immediately after having received a goal in, that's fantastic, because that means that this team is so flexible in their acting already.
There was great balance to the team tonight. The midfield of Jamie Finn, Megan with her goal, of course, Denise, player of the match. Yeah. It really worked.
Yeah, it worked, and maybe you've seen that at the end we played 5-4-1, and we left Denise on the left, where usually she's in the middle, but we chose for Jamie and Megan because they are real sitters, and they can battle there with the more mobility on the wing, because we needed that there, and I think that's been a good decision with her pace on the right side.
So you've got the 3 points on the road, which is always difficult against an opponent ranked higher than you.
Yeah.
What will this do for the confidence now?
Well, it gives us such a boost that we can get out of this group. We can. It will many games to go, many difficult games to go, because Slovakia is also a very difficult game. And even Georgia, they won 3-0 from Georgia, and if you see the pressure that they put on us. But it's a good boost, and next month we have the next games.
Well done.
1-5-4-1. Can you talk me through my old GAA head there, Alan, please?
Moving swiftly on, quickly, David. Yeah. It's all coach and talk nowadays. But
the spirit is great, though, isn't it?
Absolutely. And she's a real infectious character, Vera. You know, she spoke about, I suppose, the friendlies that they had, the result against Australia in preparation for these games. And she felt she could have taken some easier friendlies, but she took a really difficult one against Australia, got the win to set them up for these difficult games that were coming down the track with Sweden and Finland. But it's been proved right, Damien, tonight. Obviously, the performance the other night, people were saying it was very good. I was just of the opinion I felt they could have had a go against Sweden, but this was the game that they really had to target. They really had to get the 3 points, and they're after delivering absolutely brilliant performance and brilliant results.
One of the stars on show tonight was Denise O'Sullivan, Allen, and let's hear from her now.
Denise O'Sullivan, congratulations. You are the Sky Player of the Match, and what a magnificent victory on the road.
Yeah, absolutely delighted to get 3 points here tonight. It wasn't a pretty performance, but we got the 3 points and we'll go home happy.
Well, there was a lot to good about that performance. It was composed, it was controlled. Some terrific goals as well.
Yeah, some good goals. Megan Connolly's free kick, I was screaming at her to take that free kick. It was for her, so I'm absolutely delighted for her. And yeah, we stayed composed at times. I think we could have done better with the ball, but we get through these games. We're going to have a few of those games to get to the next level, and we'll take 3 points tonight.
We were worried about you at the end of the game in Sweden because you looked like you had a serious arm injury. That's a bit of a miraculous recovery.
I got kicked when I was on the floor into the elbow, but I couldn't move it, so I didn't know if there was something serious wrong or not. So it was just important to get that scan, but I was ready to go again in a few days and happy to help the team tonight.
Yeah, happy to help and happy to have Alan O'Cauley with us on a great night tonight as well. And thanks so much for your time.
Pleasure, Damien.
After the break, Kerry great Aidan O'Mahony is talking about himself and asking himself some hard questions in the writing of his brilliant new memoir. See you soon.
With Green Fern, have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Fern's high protein cooked chicken breast fillet, available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on, football.
Yeah, Kerry football great Aidan O'Mahony has just published his memoir. It's called Unbroken and it's getting great reviews. It's just been shortlisted for an Irish Book Award. Marie caught up with Aidan on all of his stories in the past few days.
Game on.
Gaelic football.
Look, it's when footballers and sports people release books, I often find that you don't really learn a huge amount about them. But this one was different. I found myself just thinking, wow, I feel like I didn't really know Aidan O'Mahony at all. You know, as in, I'd see on the pitch, was well aware of what you were capable of in the Kerry jersey. But there's so much more going on behind the scenes, really, that people wouldn't know until they start turning the pages in this book. How did you find the whole process of just sharing, so much about yourself?
Yeah, so I suppose when I started first, I went on the Camino in 2019 with Croy as an ambassador. And I suppose the one thing about Camino is you've plenty of time to reflect, on life and everything. And you're out there walking every day with, you know, 20-something people that, you know, who all have their own different stories. And for me, it was one of the things that I had in my head coming home that think about writing a book. And then obviously I met someone from Hatchet, Ciara Dooley, and we sat down. And when I started in at the start of lockdown, it was like no different. No one gives you the tools or tells you that there's a bit in it, and it's stressful because you're actually replaying your life again. And for me, when I started the book, I said it's either two ways. People are probably, you know, there's been so many books wrote from other players from, I suppose, my generation, from 2004 to 2014, that people would say, oh, here we go, another one of the Kerry lads. And I just said, look, I've been retired for 4 years, and if I was going to write a book, then I'd give it, you know, I suppose, an honest kind of endeavour of, I suppose, not the career of a player, but the person behind that jersey or that cape, for one word or another. And I suppose reveal as honest as I could, to be honest with you. And it was tough times. It was stressful. Like when you're reflecting and you're kind of reliving all those moments again. Like, so, look, as I said, it's out there now. And it's a different side, I suppose, of where, exactly what you said, Emery, where people usually say, is it all G? And it's far from it.
And I suppose something that was really glaring from the book as well is that, you know, when things happened on the pitch that maybe, you know, are away from the winning All-Irelands and climbing steps in Croke Park, like when there's incidents like the Donegal O'Connor affair, that there are so many repercussions for things like that in real life as well. So, like, we just see them as sports fans and, you know, we'd have a talk around the water cooler. But you actually have to deal with people not being happy with you, people telling you what they think, people judging you. And that's a really heavy cross to bear as well.
Yeah, and there's two sides to that. Number one is that, like, I was totally responsible for myself. You know, it was embarrassing for myself. It was embarrassing for my family. You know, when you're in, we'll say, in the public eye as a guard, number one, you know, then you're never away from people. You know, you're always going to be meeting people. And for me, you know, there's no there is no part in either GAA or in sport for that behaviour, you know, like feigning an injury. And and for me as well, like, it, like in Kerry, like football is a religion, you know, you grow up from the tales of the Kerry Golden Years and all these guys and what they've given for Kerry football. And then you see someone like myself that who played in the Edge, and you know, when something like that happens, then sympathy is in very short supply. And like, it was tough, and I've, like, as I said, like, yes, I was the one that caused the whole thing, but in the same time, it's trying to move on from something like that, or that moment didn't define my 13 or 14 years in the Kerry jersey, or not moving on from it. And like, for someone like me, and I've no problem saying this, that from a young age I'd be a total introvert where I'd keep myself to myself. I'd say people thought he's a strange personality or he's very deep, and I was one of these people that never dealt with anything, whether it was on the pitch or off the pitch. And I always had this kind of perception of myself that people had this kind of mindset that, oh, he's teaked off on the pitch, and that I thought then that I had to be that person. You know, that if I talked about like my issues or my challenges, that it would be seen as a weakness. And that was the kind of template I followed from a young age, whether it was dealing with the asthma or like those times in 2008 on, from dealing with mental health, which we'll probably get to. But you know, I thought that I couldn't talk about it, it would have been a stigma, it was a weakness, and I just left the whole thing snowball into something that I actually couldn't deal with in the finish.
When you think the fact that you are talking about it now in the book, and you know, Keith Earls as well has revealed that he struggled with a lot of mental health issues throughout his career, and I think people are really surprised, because it is often those players that are, you think are teaked tough and can handle anything and almost invincible, then it, like, that really reflects as well the mental resilience that you do have though as well, Aidan, when you think about it, that you could deal with whatever challenges you were facing yourself and be able to master them and to play at such a level and perform at some level. Like, the resilience that you must have to be able to deal with any issues you have and still perform, it's really impressive.
I suppose it is, but like, some part of me as well, even when I was writing the book, you know, you kind of feel like a fraud, because I think nowadays, you know, you a lot of sports people and people in general that come out and they talk about mental health, and you know, they're amazing ambassadors and role models. Then I'd look back at my time and I felt like I was a fraud, because you'll go out and you're meeting young kids and you're talking about sport and you're going to schools and you're doing talks, and at the back of your mind you're saying, well, you're not being genuine to the audience that you're talking to, because you're not being you, you're not being honest. Like, you're again, and next to you, you're being addressed as, oh, Aidan O'Mahony has won this and that. And you have young people looking up at you saying, you know, I might never get to that level. And I found that now, like with writing the book, it's out there where, you know, there was a lot of stuff that I couldn't deal with. And I found even the inhaler thing was just something that totally floored me, because, like, I think the media ran with the story, like, of O'Mahony failed drug test, and then that's the great thing for people to beat you with a stick, especially after the Donegal Panner incident. Like, as I said, the sympathy was in very short supply. So when that happened, you know, I found, like, getting messages and people sending stuff to my house in Cork, and, you know, like, people, you know, like, sending me messages, like, saying, Jesus, like, what's the story here? And, like, in some sense, people knew, like, yeah, it had to do with inhaler, but it obviously wasn't a good enough story. They tried to put a different spin, and I found that 3 or 4 months, like, very tough. And you're trying to kind of, every day and every week, you're, I suppose, trying to give your side of story to people. And, you know, you ask people you talk to, they have no interest. They just want to hear, I suppose, the darker side of it. And, yeah, like, a lot of that just kind of totally drained me. And I think it drained my, I suppose, love for the sport I was brought up on. And it changed my personality a lot. And as I said, that was part of it, I think, growing up and being an introvert and the whole asthma thing as well. All those together just made me, I think, a disliked person. I have no problem saying that now. And I look back when I was even reading this, or writing this book, and I was saying dislikable, dishonest, you know, pushed away people. And that's just the person I was. Like, even inside in training and away from training, going home in the cars and not being able to sleep at night, my mind was constantly on overdrive. And you know, in the finish, like, something had to give.
Did you find that the test and the asthma and all that kind of followed you around throughout your career?
Yeah, I think people are always going to have their own opinion. Like, Marie, I'll be very honest. Like, when you fill out that therapeutic form at the start of the year, that was 2008, and it was the All-Ireland final. It was actually the worst game I actually played. And, you know, for a player, you fill out the form. It's like you nearly sign your name to it. That's it. And you go training. Because even at that time, I think until my case came up that time, and it came out the first GA player ever, that's when things started being taken seriously. And if I'm not wrong, like, where people are saying, oh, geez, hold on now, we have to put more time into this at the start of the year. What are you taking? You know, what supplements are you on? So that's being addressed. And what I found then is that, like, when I went into the meeting that time, I was saying, yeah, look, I take my inhaler, and I might take two puffs at a time. And that in a therapeutic form that I said I put down, it would take you 3 or 4 times, but I hadn't emphasised that it was 2 puffs each time or something like that. And I was saying, like, if you're an asthma, and the amount of messages I got from people that have asthma and whatnot was actually frightening. And they were saying, like, you're here having to explain yourself in front of a committee with a 2-year ban over you. And then when it finished with, like, it dragged on for nearly 4 months. And this is not a pity thing now or something, but I just found that I had an awful dislike and hate for GAA number one. And then I just found I started getting very paranoid with people and talking to people. And then I was getting abuse when I was out. And, you know, you'd be inside in the bar and when someone throwing an inhaler up in front of you, or you're inside before a game and people are watching you. And all of a sudden your mind just gets totally driven mad. And that's the way it was, yeah.
And I'd imagine as well, when you're from a county like Kerry and playing for a county like Kerry, there's probably nowhere to hide from it either. Like, there's no escape because people are so obsessed. I mean, look, there's goods and bads with that. Like, obviously, it's brilliant to have fans who want the county to do well and will follow them till the ends of the earth and support them all the time. But what comes with that then is an obsession. And when you're playing and wearing the jersey, it's impossible to have any privacy, to maybe even just have a minute to yourself if you're out and about.
Yeah, but I even found in 2009, after the Munster final, the Cork game was the first time I was ever dropped, and I can even still kind of remember the day that Jack told me. And, like, if it was me now, like, I'd probably say to him, right, Jack, why? And, you know, we'll talk it out. Back then, I was like, you know, it was tough to take, and I found myself, like, kind of looking on forums then, and you'd see the negative thing, oh, man, he's gone, his form has gone, this and that, and, you know, what would you expect after all those instances involved and all that negativity? I was letting it feed in, and I was soaking it up because I was so negative myself at the time. And I even said, even going to training, I was definitely a negative person to be around. Like, I wasn't enjoying my football. You know, and, like, I was one of these people as well then that weren't going to talk to a sports psychologist or didn't need a psychologist. And, like, we won the All-Ireland 2009. Did I enjoy it? No, I didn't. And, like, that's being very honest. Like, I was delighted for Darren O'Sullivan. He was a young captain, a fantastic guy. And Paul Galvin, we'll say, after his 2008, he got player of the year. And, like, he was just amazing. So I was delighted for those two lads. And obviously, everyone else won it, but I was just in a very dark place at the time, just saying nothing to no one. And then I found 2010, we started off the league, and, like, you know yourself, when you're a sports person, the social scene doesn't come with it. And I found myself socialising more and more after games, and then the emotions were coming out, and I'd say people look at me like saying, what's wrong with this guy? And the last league game we played Tyrone, and I got sent off in the game. I think we played a club game the following week, and I don't know, they sent off from that, and I remember going out after the game, and I said, I text someone now that I knew that the story fly, and I just said, that's it, that's the end of it for me. And we were going to training camp that week, and I loved those training camps. Jeez, I loved the training side of it and everything. And I knew, like, this was it. And I can remember being at home, and I was in a broken state, and everything was coming up, and I was just very, very fortunate that I have support of family, because I know myself at that time where, like, you're looking at two roads, kind of. Number one, you do something about it and you get help, or number two, you just leave a snowball and God only knows where you go with it. And my mindset at that time was just on the floor, and as I said in the book, it was rock bottom. And I know everyone's rock bottom is different, but for me, I think it was years and years of dealing with not dealing with things, leaving them boil over and boil over, and I just became a person. And when I look back now, that person, I wouldn't have liked him. You know, I would have stayed as far away from him as possible myself. And that's who I was. And then I made a decision with my family to go to Ashery. And like my memory of that and that morning is my parents, and my dad especially, crying in the kitchen. And like for someone like me to say that, no, if you asked me that 10 years ago, I'd probably denied it, so I wouldn't have spoken out. But like that memory of someone that, you know, like I suppose they were a generation where your dad shouldn't cry. And that's very tough because they saw their 30-year-old son in a broken state, drained physically, mentally, and, you know, even my team players, I don't know, they might have known it, but I didn't speak to anyone about him, Marie, and that was the person I was, you know, and I've no doubt that the media and all of them thought, like, I was just a strange and deep character, and, like, I didn't put all this in a book now to kind of say, right, but look, if I was going to do a book, I said I'd never do a book, but if I was going to do it, all that was going to, as I said, that it breaks my heart, like, when I to kind of reflect back on that. And but then on the flip side, after where I came out in 6 weeks, there was a big smile on his face, like, so, you know.
And the other side of it as well, in by putting it in the book, like, who knows who you're going to help, because, you know, there's often a lot of similarities between people who are maybe playing at the elite level, you know, whether it's for their county, whether it's for their club, whether it's in other sports, and just struggling. And just young people in general are often struggling and they don't know what to do or where to turn to. But if there's people just turning those pages and reading about why you felt the need to go to Ashery and what it gave you, then, like, that will, who knows what, maybe even save some lives. You'll probably end up getting messages about it at some stage because people often don't know where to turn. And also, they think when, you know, you've decided to go somewhere for 6 weeks like Ashery, that it is going to be something that they might have seen on the television, you know, those kind of environments. But yeah, often it's very, very different. Tell us a little bit about Ashery and what it was like.
Yeah, so, like, I suppose, like, going in, you're kind of worrying about the stigma that will be attached to you. It was, like, for me, when I reflect back on that and kind of saying whether, like, people were talking about me before I went in there. And then when you come out, it's irrelevant what people say about you. You know, people are always entitled to their opinion. But for me, like, I just needed to step away from reality. Like, the great thing about inside there, there's no contacts, no phones, no contact with people from the outside. It's 6 weeks about you. And it goes through your whole life, Marie, about what you haven't dealt with, why you have all these issues. You know, like, What I did, and was what I shouldn't have been doing inside, I was constantly training nearly 3 or 4 times a day in the pitch, and that's why I think exercise became part of my life. Like, was I just needed something, you know, and walking around wasn't good enough. But it just gave me, I suppose, those tools to kind of drop that kind of shield or that guard I had in front of me and just be myself and actually start enjoying and liking the person that I was again. I know that it's hard to kind of say that, like, where I was, like, as I said that time, I hate, like, and it's a hard word to say, but I actually hated myself, and I was kind of saying to myself that before, why had I got involved in this, and, you know, why was I playing GA, and why had I let it come to this, and you're thinking all negativity, where inside there I could see the positive in things. Like, I was lucky, I did a full-time job as a guard, I had, like, a great support system there, I had a very loving family who, like, when I was going through that tough time, they were obviously going through as well, and I didn't see it. And, you know, as I said, I was a complete introvert, and when people would meet me, like, I'd be awkward. And, like, I probably haven't changed since. I'm still kind of a bit of an introvert, like, but I'm more open now. But, yeah, like, as I said, I kind of stripped myself down and started to find things that I'd enjoy in life, looking outside of sport and stuff, what made me enjoy life, what was I finding, what was good for me, and just all those things. I could be myself, and like when you're inside there, there's other people inside there, you've all different personalities, and like you're just letting yourself open to them. And like when I came out, I think the funny thing was, I came out, we'd actually championship game the following week, we played Long Rangers at my club, and I got planted in my backside. I think it was in the second half, now I was up kicking 2 points, and I was in great shape, and people I'd say were kind of saying, Jesus Christ, season. No, but I remember the title, and there was a picture in the paper during the week after, and they were like, Fallen Idol. And it was a perfect thing for me, because, you know, like I saw that and I was like, yeah, ideal now. That's what I want, because that's not what I'm going to be remembered for. And like that's the probably the person I am now, where I can see stuff on social media stuff, and I see the extent that goes now, where players are being tagged and stuff. But I was able to deal with that then and kind of say, well, that's not what I'm going to be remembered for.
So what are you going to be remembered for then?
Jesus Christ, I don't know. I don't know. Like, and I look back, like the medals and stuff, like it's irrelevant. And I mean that not in an arrogant way. Like it's, I've amazing memories, Marie, like where I was very fortunate to play with probably some of the greatest players that ever played the game. You know, I got that opportunity to put on a Kerry jersey. I have an amazing club. I have brilliant memories with them. You know, I've a fitness business now, and I've learned about myself in life, where I was, as I said, a complete introvert, and like I've learned from that side of it. And you know, like I take every day, I'm thankful for what I have, home, kids, and like sport isn't everything. I love sport. I absolutely love sport. But I know it's not everything. I'm able to take losing and winning, and you know, I'm involved now in doing the Rage and carrying stuff and still playing my club. You know, so like they're small things. And I think from lockdown, I've seen myself, you have your health and you have those closest to you. You know, and if I look back there 10 years ago, if I knew that back then, you know, then you have everything.
Well, I think that's the perfect way to end it, Aidan. It is a brilliant book, Unbroken, A Journey of Adversity, Mental Strength and Physical Fitness. And it is in all good bookshops.